Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for April 18th. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, welcome from Freaknik Town.
Well, and we'll talk about that later on, already previewing the topics. And then welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. Well, big week in politics, at least Georgia politics, and we're going to talk some other states, like Anastasia Oppa is going to join us a little later in the first half hour to talk Florida politics, but could be things in Georgia, and I guess the first one I thought we'd open up with is our guest last week, Mike Freeman. He was gung-ho just a week ago, but then late in the week we got a press release stating that he was no longer going to seek either the special election or the general. I know I forwarded that to y'all if y'all didn't already get it directly. It didn't get much attention elsewhere, unfortunately, because the guy was, you know, very knowledgeable on the issues. Tim, any ideas what happened there?
Well, you know, like you said, this time last week he was on with us. He was primed to run. I'm going to assume that something personal took place, some family-related matter, something like that, because just all of a sudden he was gone. So, you know, I don't think it wasn't like he had been thinking about this for a long time. Something happened between Sunday and Wednesday to make him drop out of the race. So I'm going to assume it was a personal or family related.
Yeah, I mean, Catherine, you saw the same press release. Any ideas what happened, Mike Freeman?
I don't know. I'm gonna assume, like Tim, that it was something personal, and I hope that it's not something tragic, and I hope that it's not some pressure from, you know, some other, you know, some political pressure. But I wish him all the best. He was a great candidate. I was very discouraged to learn that news because I thought he was really good. He seemed very well informed on the issues, and he had very similar views as to mine, and I was really, you know, I was getting ready to write him a check. I hadn't done it yet. I guess I'm glad about that, but I was very discouraged, very disappointed.
Yeah, and really it didn't get any attention anywhere else. I mean, it wasn't on any of the blogs.
Well,
it wasn't on AJC.
He hadn't qualified yet.
Yeah, so, but I mean, still, like, if somebody decides not to run, I mean, typically, you know, there's a press release sent out. I mean, you know, certainly, like, you know, your you know, Blog for Democracy, Peach Pundit. I mean, somebody you think would pick up on it.
And that somebody was the only Democrat in that race, too. You think they would have picked it up just to play that angle of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the GOP, the GOP bloggers, they could have said, hey, see how weak they are. Their only hope, you know, went away. You know, and that may be because they have no worries in that race themselves, that they're so busy shooting their own that they can't even worry about us. But that race, I guess, is, you know, about a month away. What is it? May 14th? Is that the date?
I thought it was May
18th.
10th.
10th.
I have to look.
Pick your Tuesday. Yeah, if it's a Tuesday and it's any of the dates we said, that's probably the one. But, yeah, I mean, that's probably you know, that's what I guess they're looking at. They have their own candidates to worry about. May 11th. Now, I guess then the big question goes, okay, let's assume that, say, 20%, and that's a pretty low number, 20% of that district is Democratic. Where does that 20% begin to go to? Either one of y'all.
They stay home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any candidate that any Democrats are going to feel the love, you know, far up. That's not even a maverick like Dr. Brown, you know, was over in Athens when the Democrats kind of helped him stick a finger in the establishment's eye over there. There's not even anybody like that to rally behind this time around, so I don't know what they'll do.
Well, and here's the question. Does one of these Republicans that's looking at it saying, man, I'm third, I'm fourth, do they somehow try to reach out to Democrats in some kind of secretive way? I mean, it would be a very risky, tricky move for them.
How could
I mean,
they do that?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, it seems, I mean, you know, you're looking now at the biggest chunk of the electorate that is open. Not by any means the biggest chunk of the electorate, but the biggest chunk that's open is now up for grabs in that race. Now, here's the question I have. It, Mike Freeman may end up staying on the ballot if they've already printed the ballots. And then that group wouldn't be up for grabs. Obviously, he wouldn't be trying to get them out anymore. But it's something to think about. I mean, maybe they just say, hey, let's pick the least likely candidate to win and vote for him just to, you know, make hay, if you will. I don't know where that gets you, but it's just something to think about. Now, I happen to be up in Gordon County today for the first time since the special election's been going on, and I noticed that Tom Graves, who is the state representative from Gordon County, good gracious, he's going to win that county. If he gets 80% of that county, I wouldn't be shocked, but I'd be shocked if he gets under 60% of that county, and that's probably one of the more populous counties after Hall and Whitfield in that district. I just have to think he's the odds-on favorite now. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I do. He's also been getting some endorsements from some big-name Republicans lately, too, so I got to think he's the person to beat. What I was wondering, do you suppose, I know that like Catoosa County has a rather new and very active Democratic Party up there, as does now Dade County once again. I'm wondering if they'll try to scare up somebody and get them on the ballot.
Now, wait, the qualifying's closed for that, though, isn't it? Now, you can qualify for the general, but you can't qualify for the special anymore.
Right. But
yeah,
the qualifying for the general starts. Qualifying for the general starts on the 26th.
Yeah, I agree. You try to find somebody for the general, obviously. Catherine?
Yeah, I would think that would be the plan, is to get somebody to qualify for the general at least.
Yeah, I mean that's what I would look at.
Are we to the point as a party in this state where we can't even find people to run in congressional elections? Have we sunk that far?
Well, and I think
we don't really have anyone running in the senatorial election, really.
Well, we'll get to that, Catherine.
We still don't have anybody really yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to discuss that, and I think you may be thinking along the lines of me. But now, as far as that district, it is tough in two ways. One, I mean, it is one, if it's not the least Democratic, it's one of the two least Democratic in the state. Secondly, with that district, I think everybody knows, is going to look radically different after the census. I mean, that's the one that I believe will just be divided down the middle, and there's going to be east and west half, and they're going to throw new parts of other existing districts in with it. But, I mean, I get that sense, and so somebody might even be looking at it and say, well, why run on this race this year, this configuration, when next time it'll be a much more manageable district to campaign for me because I don't have to cross the mountains east to west from whichever side I'm on.
That's pretty lame.
I mean,
see what you're saying, but it's pretty lame if you can't get, you know, some warm body to at least, you know, be on the ticket.
Yeah, I will say this. I mean, you travel in a district can be tough. And in that area, if you've never been up in the mountain area, I mean, they're driving east to west across that area. There are some roads that look like those driveways. I had a conference one time. It was a 3-day conference, and I woke up every day in Rome and drove over to about Ellijay. And once I got a little west to Calhoun, or east to Calhoun, I mean, it was like, I hope I don't drive off the road. And then I've gone across through Dawson County one time going to 85, and it was, you know, it's very unnavigable at times. Tim?
But still, if nothing else, heck, couldn't the state party or somebody just put up the qualifying fee and tell somebody, you know what, you don't have to run, but we're going to put your name on the ballot. You know, how about that?
Just so we can see how many Democrats come out and vote for a Democrat.
But don't we have that baseline? If he is one of the Democrats there are, I mean, you've got that baseline from Jeff Scott, you know, 2 years ago. Now, if you want to put that person on the ballot, because then way you can have a federal state combo, because sometimes they like to, you know, do mail that has two races and it lets you pull out of the state poll or the federal poll or what have you, that can help. But then, of course, that can get taken care of with the U.S. Senate race that, Catherine, you've already alluded to. Now, of course, the big news on Friday night was that Michael Thurman's going to run for U.S. Senate. Catherine, since you sound like you're chomping on the bit on this one, what are your thoughts here?
Well, first of all, he did not say he's going to run for Senate. He said he's going to make an announcement on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So what the hell is that? I'm sorry. Excuse me. But, I mean, I get so tired of these vamps. You know, how long has this vamp been for Michael Thurman? I mean, I love Michael Thurman, and I wish he'd stay as labor commissioner. But how long do we have to listen to him say, oh, I might run? I mean, really? Just announce it. Why do we have to get an announcement on Friday that we're going to make an announcement on Tuesday?
Well, and the thing is, you know, to me, why is it on Friday, which is the worst day to break news? I mean, this is the day you dump news you don't want anybody to know about. It's Friday. I found that kind of interesting, even if you're trying to leak it out. Maybe it was something where, Jim Galloway, you know, did some reporting and dug this up, and so it wasn't planned. But I thought the timing of it was pretty, you know, interesting. Tim?
Well, I think probably what they did was they did release it on Take Out the Garbage Day just so it would get enough play so that maybe they could do something like quietly get a poll out in the field before Tuesday, just to see for sure what they're talking about. And secondly, I really wish he would not do this. I'm certain that Roy Barnes is very happy about this, by the way. The combination of, say, a weak GOP nominee like Oxendine, along with an increased African-American turnout, might be enough to accidentally put Governor Barnes back in the governor's mansion. But Thurman, and I love Michael Thurman, too. He's one of my very favorite politicians in this state in recent years. He cannot beat Johnny Isaacson. So what is he thinking? Is he thinking that maybe if Isaacson has to drop out for health reasons, he would be in the catbird seat? Well, he would. But, you know, that's a mighty big if.
Yep.
And it looks to me like all this is going to do is hand the labor commissioner's chair over to the Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, there is the big risk. I mean, with Thurbert Baker running for attorney general, there'll be no – and then Tommy Irvin, we assume, is going to retire. There'll be no incumbents, and an incumbency on down-ballot races is huge, and the Democrats haven't won an open seat on a statewide down-ballot race since Michael Thurman won in 98. You know, the odds aren't good. Now, we do have some good candidates in a lot of these races. I mean, that's the upside. But then the dynamics of this year don't look like the best one to take a chance.
Yeah. I was going to say the realistic side of it is that we could be completely wiped out at the statewide level after this election.
I mean, yeah, we could be sitting here with no holding no offices whatsoever after, in January. And that would be very, very sad, I think, if that's the case. I mean, we think we're in bad straits now. We'd be in Texas, 5-8 years ago straits. if that happens. You know, some people say take chances and, you know, you may catch lightning in a bottle. But, you know, even though if you look at what the Republicans are doing in the state of Georgia, it seems like all the anger people have, they could easily then direct at the Republican Party of Georgia. But so much politics is national these days. It's no longer local. Tip O'Neill didn't live long enough to see today. People somehow just vote nationally on everything, even if it has nothing to do with national politics. It's all about those, you know, countrywide trends. Catherine, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I also think that, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for what you're saying. I think it's true that people look at national politics and, you know, vote locally in the way that they view the national politics. But I also think that a strong, outspoken, optimistic party can help that. And I don't think that we have that right now. We don't have a, you know, we don't have a voice. There's, I mean, who's the voice of the Democratic Party in Georgia right now?
Yeah, I mean, even though Roy Barnes will likely be it by the time election day rolls around, right now, we don't have a voice.
We need somebody before elections. I think that is one of the reasons that we stumble around, is that we just don't have a strong party anymore. And it's, you know, and I take some of the blame for that. I think all Democrats can take some of the blame for that. But ultimately, we need some leadership. And as much fondness as I have for Jane, I don't think that the leadership is coming from Spring Street right now. And it's a big disappointment.
Well, I don't think they have, the money they necessarily need. And then I don't think that, you know, a lot of the media or whatever respects the party structure as it is anyway. And I don't even know if do you think the party structure can even be that as it is?
I can tell you this, David, having been working at the grassroots level for years up here, when we built this local party up, we did it with no outside help. The Georgia State Democratic Party, even when the Democrats were in total control, was built from Atlanta down, not from the grassroots up. When the Republicans seized control of Georgia, it is no accident that Ralph Reed was the head of the Republican Party here, because he is a very good grassroots organizer, and that's what he did at the local level. He even came up here to Chattooga County. That's the kind of thing you got to do. We have always felt that the Atlanta party was just that, in Atlanta.
But it's guys, it's not even in Atlanta. It's Spring Street. It's in the Capitol, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been going. I don't go anymore. I haven't gone in a year. But I went to the Fulton County Democratic Party meetings for years, and not once did we ever see anybody from. I shouldn't say not once. Occasionally, someone from the state party would come and tell us about the JJ dinner or about something, but they weren't participating. Even the people who live in Fulton County, who are, you know, constitutional officers and elected officials, don't come to. Granted, the Fulton County Party is not very well organized, and they're not in very good shape. But part of the reason for that is because we didn't get any support from anybody. You know, we never saw the elected officials. I say never, but it wasn't never. But they weren't participating members. So it's,
yeah,
you know,
the flagship county of the country, if you are. So the state, I mean. If they're not getting it done, then that's where the state capital is. That's where probably more of the power brokers in the, you know, state Democratic Party live, is Fulton more than any other county.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, that's kind of a sad state of affairs.
And if you ask them, they tell you that it's because the party, the Fulton County Party, is so dysfunctional. And my response is, well, then get in and get involved so it's not so dysfunctional. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
a million votes there. I mean, that's not some little, you know, that you know, a lot of times I'm sure they count votes. And they say, oh, there's only so many voters in X county. But in Fulton County, there's a, you know, there's a, how many people live in Fulton County? Over a million. So it's probably a million voters. But, yeah.
I don't think it's that many.
No, I think three counties in Georgia have a million people, don't they? I thought it was,
I'll tell you
I thought Fulton, DeKalb, and Gwinnett are all right there with a million people almost. But yeah, you're checking census.
Oh, you're right.
Hours.
It is a million.
Yeah.
As of July 2008.
So obviously there's not a million voters because obviously everybody's not voting either age-wise or just by getting their butts out and doing it. But yeah, so I'm saying there's a lot of folks there, a lot more than a lot of big chunks of the state, if you will, more than a congressional district for that matter. But that's, you know, that's kind of what this Senate campaign started out like, is like, why are we seating the labor commissioner spot? Now, then the next question becomes, who's going to run for labor commissioner now?
Well, the rumor is that Daryl Hicks is going to run, who ran for Secretary of State in 2006.
Going to be doing it on short notice without time to raise funds or any of that. It's going to be
there's several problems with that. Then one, this is a candidate that, you know, didn't even win the nomination for the party for a different office, and I ran a race in a different southern state for two different offices. And the guy ran really strong 1 year, and then he came back and he decided to run for a different office, and he did worse the next time because the guy got tagged as a runner. Because then people were saying, oh, this guy, he just wants to, you know, serve any office. He didn't care about the so-and-so spot. He just wants to be an elected governor, you know, elected official. And so that kind of, you know, gets into that.
Back to the gist of the thing, though. What is the labor commissioner's angle here? What is he thinking? He's got to be able to read the same polls that we read that show Isaacson beating him or Thurbert Baker, anyone else that would have been thinking about coming to this race easily.
Well, maybe there's something about Isaacson's health that we don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that was always something that looked like a possibility. But to me, if it's the kind of thing where, you know, you're a decent candidate, but you're not risking anything, you may say, hey, let's, you know, look and jump in there and get in there on that. But then if you're risking something, that becomes a totally different thing to me.
But the big winner will not be Michael Thurman. It'll be Roy Barnes, right? If there is a big winner for the Democrats in this.
Yeah, I mean, that becomes another question. Is it, I mean, how much, you know, I know that I've heard that mentioned on the blogs and other places. How much is turnout really going to be boosted because Michael Thurman's on the ballot? I know Poole used to think, oh, that's, you know, if you have an African-American candidate on the ballot, that's really going to boost turnout big time. But now that, you know, Barack Obama's been elected, how novel is it anymore to have a senator? You know what I mean? It's the wow factor to me is kind of gone.
Well, there's more to Michael Thurman than the fact that he's an African-American.
Oh, no.
I'm talking about
that part.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I agree. You look at him as an elected official. I mean, he's done an outstanding job in his office. He's one of the best orator. He's probably the best orator in the state. I'm not looking at Michael Thurman here when I say that. I'm looking at just that conventional wisdom, if you will. I just think, as far as that goes, that little silver bullet, little tried and true thing that people would pull out when somebody would run for the, you know, this spot for the first time, you know, say 10 years ago, you could use that to that point. But now that the president's been elected, I just think the shine is off of that penny. What do you think, Catherine?
I disagree with you.
You
it's
still
not,
think that's
I mean, a, what do we have, two African-Americans in the Senate right now?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Is that right? And there's only been six ever elected? I mean, you know, I will always say that I think that being a U.S. senator is as prestigious, if not more prestigious, and more influential than being the president. It's a very important
role. President
of
the United States.
No, I think, I mean, if I were to, like, wake up one morning and someone would say, you can have any, you can be a congresswoman, you can be a senator, or you could be the president. I'd say I want to be a senator.
Yeah, I mean, now I wouldn't call it more prestigious. You might say, hey, that way there's 99 other people I can blame.
Well, no, I mean, it's a very strategic and important role, and we have had dismal representation both for women and African Americans in the U.S. Senate. So I do not think this shines off that penny at all. I think it's a very, I think it would be, I don't know much about polling and all that stuff, but I would think that having an African American running for U.S. Senate in Georgia would be a really good, it would probably bring us some DSCC money. It would probably put us more visibly nationally. The thing is that that isn't to say that he could necessarily beat Johnny Isaacson, but I don't think the shine's off that penny. I think
different. We should get DCCC money just because we've got a good candidate now. I mean, he is a top shelf candidate. That's the trick there.
Well, here's the deal. Where R.J. Hadley, who I like very much, by the way, would have gotten 30 to 35% of the vote in the general election because of lack of funding and whatnot. We're looking now at Thurman, if he's the nominee, maybe getting as much as 45% of the vote. Those extra votes is an African American base that suddenly has woke up. That 10% can really, really, really help Roy Barnes.
As African American, R.J. Hadley's African American. That's the difference, not
the
black candidate. It says the difference between good candidate and unknown candidate.
Right, right. That's what
there.
You're talking about. You're talking about a well-funded candidate who also has a lengthy record of state service to run on and is without a doubt one of the finest stump speakers in the state of Georgia.
Yes.
Running, you know, in that place. And it's going to, I still think the big winner in all of this is Governor Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, assuming he's the nominee, now then the question becomes is somehow does this help, hurt, or have absolutely no impact on Thurbert Baker?
Hmm.
I mean, it shouldn't have any. In a perfect world, it shouldn't have any impact on Thurbert Baker. They should be seen as two separate races. But I mean, you know, I don't think Thurbert Baker's out of this thing as far as being the nominee. I think he's got, a chance at this thing. And I mean, I'll go ahead and tell you, if the election were today, I'd vote for Thurbert Baker.
Here's what Thurbert Baker needs to do. He needs to wake up the day after primary day in a runoff. He needs to keep Roy Barnes below 50%, then all bets are off.
Yeah, if Thurbert Baker is in the runoff with Roy Barnes, I think Thurbert Baker has a really good shot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, I'm still undecided, if you will, but if I had to vote today, I don't mind saying that I would vote for Thurbert Baker. I believe we have a caller from the 678 area code. Caller, welcome to the Kudzu Vine.
Hey, guys. I'm Mayo from Georgia. How you doing?
Hey.
Hey, Mel, how you doing? Mel, longtime caller. Several times you called in. Well, Mel, what's on your mind?
I just comment on the Michael Thurman, analysis there. If we're looking at it as a black white turnout issue, I just don't see how. I don't see how the black turnout could be any greater than it was for Barack Obama in Georgia. Now you got to remember, McCain won by 5 points and you'd have to say, Obama's base was more energized than McCain's base in Georgia, if there was such a thing as a McCain base in Georgia, and that base that did turn out and vote for McCain and beat Obama by 5 points, that base is much more energized right now than it was in November of 08, and I don't think the black base there will be as anywhere near as energized voting for Thurman or whoever. It can't be any more energized than it was in November of 08. That's my only point.
Well, I agree with you.
Well,
Thurman,
the only thing I'll say
is
that it could be more energized if President Obama came down and made his presence known.
But Obama
in
lost by 5 points to McCain, and nobody in Georgia liked McCain. So
and that's
apparently 5% more people liked McCain than liked Obama in Georgia.
Right. But there was no energy there. I mean,
that's why I believe that even with an increased turnout, Mel, that Thurman still loses by 10 points. Like I said, the person that's helped by this is Roy Barnes.
And Isaacson, I mean, Isaacson is well-liked. I mean,
he is.
He's not an easy enemy to run against. Now, Saxby, there's more dissatisfaction with Saxby in the conservative base than I think. But Johnny's pretty well liked, I think, even by...
But is he well-liked by the same people that like... I mean, he's not liked by the, you know, birth baggers.
The birth baggers. I don't know. I haven't touched base with the birth baggers.
That's what I call them. The tea baggers, whatever.
I just think he's just not hated. He's just not a guy that's easy to hate. He's just a nice guy. I mean, I don't know what that actually means, but Saxby, there is a little more ire for Saxby Chambliss. But, I mean, even Saxby won, you know, 10 days after... Obama McCain, or however many days it was, I mean, he won by 15 points. I just don't see the conservative base is gonna come out a lot stronger, a lot more energized, I think, in Georgia than it did for McCain. But
yeah, would they support a candidate like Karen Handel more than they would say John Oxendine?
That's a tough one. I would say yes, but the Oxendine is good. It's going to be tough because Karen's got some pro life issues and she's got some, you know, some gay pride issues or gay pride parade issues and stuff over in Fulton that Ox is going to use against her. So that's a tough one. She don't have the right to life vote. Ox does. Johnson does. I could tell you this. I've talked to dozens of people from various campaigns, and they're not going to lift a finger for Oxendine if he gets the nomination against Barnes. I've heard people that said they'll vote for Barnes, and these are people who are very, very active in the Republican Party, actively working on Austin Scott's campaign, Johnson's campaign, all sorts of campaigns, and they've said there ain't no way. They're not going to lift a finger. So
why don't they like him?
They think he's a shakedown artist.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the same reason we don't like him. He's a walking ethics violation.
Right. And Deal's starting. Everybody's getting the same feeling about Deal now. Personally, I would work for Johnson. I would work for Karen Handel. I'd work for Austin Scott. But those two, I'll probably find something else to spend my time working on. You know, pick a different race or something else.
Well, don't you think Karen Handel has a pretty good chance to win that nomination?
I think she does, yeah. I think she does.
So
she doesn't have much money, though. She got about 500 and change. Johnson's got 1.8, and Ox got 2.0, and she didn't do it. She didn't bring home the money on March 31st date.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. I thought she'd have a lot more money.
Seems like she got a lot of support, but just to say no money there. The money still keeps going to Johnson, and of course Ox had to sit out. But I think, you know, it's getting so close now, people are going to be like, man, Oxendine's going to win this thing. We better get in, and he's going to raise some money probably the rest of the way out. A lot of people probably holding back money from him, hoping he, you know, something would, you know, he's kind of turned into Teflon John, and a lot of people holding back money, but now they're like, man, you know, we're 2 months out, and this guy's still pulling at 20 to 30%, and he's got a good chance of being the candidate, so they're probably going to get their contributions into him. But we'll have to see here at the end of May. As you go into about the first week of May, see if Johnson can catch Deal. Deal had horrific earnings. I mean, he barely made $200,000. And if you remember, all of his stuff came out on the AJC probably about 4 or 5 days to go in the fundraising period there towards the end of March, and that's usually when people have all their big fundraising dinners and galas set up that last week of the period. So he went walking into all them fundraisers with being on the front page of AJC for three straight days, and it's obvious.
Well, plus, I mean, if in these times, if you're donating to a candidate and you find out that they're spending, you know, $20,000 on legal fees fighting something
right.
that has nothing to do with the election,
right?
You know, that's it's one thing when everybody's flush and there's lots of money, but that's
yeah.
not the case right now. And
he's spending money on. He's been burning more cash than he's been taking since he got in this thing.
Right.
He's got the 200. He's got less than Handel. He's got about the same as Handel because he's got that $250,000 loan, which isn't even really a loan. He took $250,000 from the campaign, put it in a safety deposit box as collateral for a $250,000 loan. So. His number shows being at, I think, 800 or 900 or whatever it is. Part of that number is literal $250,000 sitting in a safety deposit box as collateral, which he can't touch. So that's not real money. So he's really got about $600,000, but he's burning money like crazy, and he's not going to be able to go statewide with the ad. The only two people that are going to be able to go statewide here are Johnson and Ox, and Johnson's already had an ad to go statewide.
Yeah. Yeah, he has.
Now, he's got name ID problem, and what's hurting him is having four people in this thing. But part of the Johnson strategy probably was, you know, one or two of these folks would have fell off eventually, and that would have helped him get a little more name ID. It's hard to get name ID when you got five, six guys running, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see.
Yeah, well, Mel, thanks for calling in and giving your insight on – I guess two of the races, if you will. Keep listening.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mel.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, well, I guess he talked about John Oxendine, and that's as good a time. He made John Oxendine debuts twice this week, both related to his insurance commissioner role, not his gubernatorial race. One was that he found out that Georgia has, I guess, the fifth highest auto insurance rates in the country, which – I will say this, being a more highly populated state with more traffic, that's going to get you up fairly high right there. So that's kind of beyond John Oxendine's control. But then are we like 8th or 10th in population? So that means we're still a little higher than our population rank, and that's where he does control. Catherine and Tim, your thoughts on that?
Well, the other states that have high population have multiple metropolitan areas
mm-hmm.
and high population, but we just really have
yeah.
our one main metropolitan area, and the traffic, you know, we're consistently second and third in population, in traffic, you know, worst traffic, L.A. and New York and Atlanta are always the, so it's not a big surprise to me.
Yeah, if you look at it, I guess if Atlanta had higher rates than other places, you'd say, okay, get that. But if you're down that Waycross paying those same rates, you might be saying, you know, what's up with that? Because
well, that's a good
I should be paying for Atlanta traffic at that point.
But on the other hand, how is John Oxendine going to play this? He can't look into the cameras and say, look, folks, we have the fifth highest insurance rates in the country. I told you I was fighting for you. Somehow.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to go over real well.
There's nothing he can use out of it now.
No.
He can try to deflect and defend that tactics. Now, the other one that I found was just more egregious to me was one of the things out of the health care bill that was going to be implemented very quickly was the high-risk insurance pool. The theory was you have all these folks that can't get private insurance all around the country. If you take them all and put them into a pool, we can begin to get them insured and get them some medical help that they need. Well, in John Oxendine's wisdom, he says, well, we don't need that in Georgia. Our Georgians that don't have insurance, well, I'm looking out for them. They don't need to be in this risky pool. How can he get away with this even? I mean, this just seems
Every time something comes out on this guy, it's something negative. You got to feel that all these things put together, it just gives me the feeling that he is blowing this race.
But, you guys, people love that. They love it. All these people who are against the health care reform, even though they don't know anything about it, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, John Oxendine, he resisted the, Obama administration and their, ridiculous insurance scam. But, Kathleen Sebelius said, that's fine. We'll still cover the people in Georgia. They're still going to the people in Georgia are still going to get that health care. They're going to be in a federal pool.
And that's what it needs to be. I mean, you can't just have states, to me, circumventing federal law left and right. I mean, it just, does no one any good. And I don't know why these different states, these conservative state governments, want to do this stuff. But they seem to be motivated. It seems to be a way they can, think they're getting places with people. But it just shows me that, John Oxendine, he is completely out for getting his name higher on the ballot, more votes for his little race, and not for helping anybody.
Exactly.
State of affairs. The people that would be glad that he did that are people that are going to be voting Republican anyway. And so he might have lost some people that such a thing would have helped that might have been looking at voting for him. Because Georgia has a lot of folks like that, and so I don't say he helped himself at all with this. What do you have to say?
I think he did.
Well, he may have helped himself with some of these characters that were already kind of in his little base, if you will. And I think there is a pool of folks that they're not going to vote for any Democrat, but that's where they're at. Well, I guess let's kind of move up. We've talked, if we talked exclusively about Georgia at this point, and of course we like to have a little variety, so let's go ahead and move over to Mississippi. We hadn't talked about Mississippi in a while, but Haley Barbour is looking at running for president. Now, of course, they mentioned this name and that name, but he's actually apparently making real moves on this.
Does he have an apartment in Iowa yet?
I don't know if he's got that yet, but Catherine, what do you think his chances are?
Oh, God, I don't know. It kills me that he would be running for president, that anybody would vote for him.
Yeah, he's an insider's insider. There's no doubt about that. But, he has been a governor, I guess, he'll have been 8 years in another year or so. Then he'll also be completely finished with his job as being governor of Mississippi, meaning he can run full-time. A lot like Mike Huckabee. Now he may not be as good a storyteller as Mike Huckabee, but then, of course, he may have a little more of those insider GOP connections since he was the head of the party way back when. Tim, your thoughts?
Well, I got a separate little thought on this. I believe his name is being floated as possible presidential timber with the thought of getting himself positioned to perhaps be the second guy on the ticket. The reason I don't believe he's running for president, the Republicans just had this Southern Republican Leadership Conference in New Orleans, last week? Before?
Mm-hmm.
And they had one of the big items on their agenda when they had that is to have a straw poll, which I believe Mitt Romney won. Yes, he did. Now, Haley Barbour was one of three Republicans who asked that his name not be put into consideration in that thing. It seems like, hey, he's from Mississippi, next door, he's Southern. This would have been right up his alley. And I would think if he were running for president, seriously, that he would have at least tested the waters right there to see where he was. Just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's more to do to this. But, the Republicans, they're pretty desperate looking for somebody. They think they've got enough anger at the president, but then do they have somebody that anybody's going to like, and that seems to be our trust, and that seems to be the tough question for them. Yeah.
Looking more and more like, Mitt Romney and
The Republicans are famous for going with their front runner. Right now, that front runner is Mitt Romney. Till I see something different, I'm saying he's the guy, at least for now.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how it unfolds from here. Now, let's go ahead and talk about Florida. In Florida, Charlie Crist, his GOP primary numbers continue to fall, having no luck running as a GOP candidate. But more and more talk and more polling gets done about him running as an independent. And the latest poll actually has him running ahead of Marco Rubio and ahead of Kendrick Meek, the odds-on favorite to be the Democratic nominee. Now, of course, the most shocking thing I found in the poll was that Kendrick Meek was below 30%. I mean, you'd have to think their baseline number for a Democrat in Florida is, you know, comfortably over 30%. Catherine, what are your thoughts on this, these numbers and Charlie Crist running as an independent?
Well, I mean, he's a Republican. I mean, let's be honest. Like, he is a Republican. So he's obviously just wants to be a senator. I think he's very popular in Florida with people who are independent-minded, I think. So it does make sense if he wants to serve, he wants to be a senator, to run as an independent, because Rubio's, you know, obviously just trouncing him. I mean, it's just amazing the polls, you know, with them against each other are just amazing. It's just, it's shocking, really, to me. But if he runs as an independent, you know, I'd rather have Charlie Crist as the senator from Georgia than Marco Rubio. So, got more power to him. Maybe he can win.
Yeah,
maybe
if
he's elected as an independent, he will serve as an independent. And the things that we like about him, he will support. And the things that we don't like about him, we can overlook while he's a senator. You know what I mean? Like, it might not be so bad to have Charlie Crist as an independent senator.
Yeah, I mean, what would he run? Yeah, that would be the thing. He would become this big swing vote every time.
Yep.
The Quinnipiac was the latest poll. It had Crist 32, right. Rubio 30, and Meek 24. I mean, the 24 was the number I was shocked by of all the three. Tim, your thoughts?
Well, there was some talk that if he ran as an independent, he might actually siphon off some votes from Meek. And if this college poll is correct, and I don't know if it is, they have a rather spotty record, then it bears that out. But something is going on. As you saw, the governor vetoed a bill that was very near and dear to the hearts of Republicans down there about teacher tenure and stuff like that. And Senator Cornyn issued a warning to Governor Crist that he better not entertain thoughts of running as an independent, as if he had some idea that Crist may be thinking about doing just that. And I think he is. He had earlier said no way, and he's walked that back a little bit and gave himself an opening. The thing is, though, I think they have to qualify in 2 weeks, so he's only got 2 weeks to decide whether or not he's going to do this. But this poll's got to give him pause, because I'm telling you, In the primary, he's going to get wiped out.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, it's
he
in
might.
A 23-point lead for Rubio over Crist, 56-33. I mean, and there's no, it's not like somebody's saying, hey, I don't know this guy. There's no way he's going to win the GOP nomination with these dynamics.
Right.
He either needs to drop out or run as an independent. Those are his two choices.
There, I think, is two choices. Of course, a lot of people will say, well, he ought to take his salt like a good Republican. Well, politicians are not famous for taking their salt without doing something about it. Just ask Senator Lieberman.
Well, but the other thing is, that, I mean, if you want to look at it in a more optimistic or positive light, maybe he thinks Rubio would really be bad for Florida, and he wants, you know, to serve Florida. I mean, there is a lot of evidence to that. I mean, in his, you know, career and in his, you know, recent votes with the teachers and those kind of things. I mean, maybe he is actually principled. I mean, I know we're kind of surprised to think about that with a Republican, but maybe he is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and it's so interesting. First, I still, but then even if he runs as an independent, I mean, I want to know the base Democratic vote in Florida, and I have to think that it's got to be higher than 24.
I mean,
if I was Kendrick Meade, I'd be worried about this poll because the
problem
not that there, I was running.
Yeah. Go ahead. The problem there, David, is that earlier when Charlie Crist was the inevitable winner, a lot of frontline Democrats passed this race up, and we went to a second-tier person in Kendrick Meade. His baseline is going to be lower than someone of more stature. Right.
Plus, people like Charlie Crist. You know,
yes.
maybe the people who they polled, they like him. He's a well... obviously, the Republicans don't like him, but I think Floridians, your average Floridian, likes him.
Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Those swing voters, those in
right.
between the middle voters. And you'd think that would have to siphon off some off of Rubio and then make the fact that or get, you know, Rubio have any more upside would be very hard because then he's boxed out. Now, the question is, Rubio's been running as far to the right as he possibly can, but then if it's Chris that's an independent, does that pull then Rubio more towards the middle to fight for votes with him that way? I mean, it changes the dynamic totally around on who's got the more powerful ground, if you will.
I don't think it's in Marco Rubio to gravitate toward the center.
Neither do I.
In his DNA. That could end Chris's chances of running as a GOP nominee. Jeb Bush, probably even in this next week, may endorse Marco Rubio. And if that happens, the idea of Chris winning the GOP nomination, that's the death knell for that.
Well, he's already got the death knell. I mean, there's no way he's going to win it.
I mean, the death knell. I mean, he's on his knees. I mean, he's right there. I mean, that's the death knell. You know what I mean? It closes it out.
That leaves him with two choices, either drop out or run as an independent. Well, if this poll is correct, why would he not very, very seriously consider doing just that?
Could there be a third choice? I don't know all the dynamics of this. If Kendrick Meek is absolutely this week, and I don't know. I'd love to see the crosstabs on this. I mean, the sense I get of Kendrick Meade is he's not a bad candidate. He was not a bad congressman. He's the kind of guy I'd be happy to vote for. But if the average Floridian sees Kendrick Meade is not an option for them, could it be that they strike some kind of deal and Charlie Crist runs as a Democrat?
I think the smart thing would be for him to run. I think he can win as an independent. I don't think he could win as a Democrat.
But
right.
then he would have all the Democratic base, and if he could somehow retain
a lot of people staying home.
Yeah, well, but then if the leaders in the Florida Democratic Party embraced him, you know, much like if Norm Coleman was embraced by the Republican GOP. I'm sorry, the Minnesota GOP leaders.
I think he becomes another Arlen Specter if he does something like that this late. People will just say, well, look, he's running as a Democrat just so he can get on the ballot in November. He could get away with that as an independent because he could at least say, look at me, I'm my own man. I don't dance to the beat of any party. But if he switches to the Democratic Party just to get the nomination, get on the ballot in November, I think the voters are going to think that's disingenuous. The only way for him to be on the ballot in November is as an independent, or he's going to have to stand down with the hope of taking on Nelson in 2 years. That's his choices. Otherwise, Catherine's right. He's dead in the water right now.
Yeah. Well, I guess we had promised the people early on in the show, Catherine, a little Freaknik talk, a little Freaknik update. Now, I know early in the week, Mayor Reed, we'll talk about the political side of this first. Mayor Reed had said, you know, we're not going to have a bunch of law breaking and things like that to get tough on it. And I think people were like, wow, you know, what a statement to make. Now, I do know there was one incident. Apparently, a guy was going over 60 miles an hour on, I believe, Peachtree Street and hit a horse-drawn carriage and flew people up, you know, upwards of 20 feet in the air and distance, some, you know, combination thereof. But beyond that, I hadn't heard a lot of other things going on. Catherine, what have you been seeing being
nothing.
An Atlanta resident?
Saw nothing. I was out yesterday down by Piedmont Park and on Peachtree Street, and there was a lot of activity because there was the Dogwood Festival at Piedmont Park, and so that was a little bit crazy, but not that bad. I mean, we got through the traffic pretty easily. We were checking our GPS to see where the traffic was, and apparently there was a lot of traffic on Peachtree Street north towards Buckhead, so I imagine that was some freaknik traffic. And then I read in the news today that there was some frivolity going on down by Underground late last night, like around midnight, and the cops broke it up, and one cop got hit in the back of the head. He's fine. He wasn't hurt. And the one, my favorite comment that I saw in that article was that the police were telling guys to pull up their pants.
And so what you're saying is I would have been safe if I would have had Hawks tickets to the playoffs game. There would have been no problem getting down there, that kind of thing. Is that what you're telling
me? There didn't seem to be. I mean, I'm sure there were some delays, the usual Saturday night delays like there always are. But it didn't, you know, I didn't hear a lot of helicopters or anything like that. So I think it was relatively restrained considering, you know, previous freaknik.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a lot going on here this weekend. There was the freaknik, there was the Dogwood Festival, the 420 Festival, which is a local brew, you know, local beer. They make they had their big beer festival. I don't know exactly where that was. But so there was a lot going on. So, you know, it's springtime in Atlanta. There's always a lot going on. But it didn't seem to be holding, you know, all of us at bay. I mean, it didn't stop me from going downtown.
Yeah.
I didn't go out today, but.
Tim, I'm taking it Freaknik didn't make it up to Somerville.
No, but, you know, I do work with some guys in Rome that were going. They weren't expecting to see the frivolity of, what, you know, what Catherine alluded to, the previous freaknicks. This one was expected to be a bit more restrained, and if what the mayor said was true, he was pleased with the way things turned out and that there was a pretty large police presence this time that kind of kept, you know, the wildness down to a minimum. And they didn't have anything like, you know, music venues or none of that going on. It was just a bunch of people milling around and nothing. I expect to get a full report from some guys tomorrow, but they weren't expecting a lot to be going on. So
yeah, with the exception of the horse-drawn carriage, and I mean, four people are hurt, and one person's apparently still in critical condition. I mean, that was bad, but I mean, that was the only incident, and I guess that could have happened any weekend with people being knuckleheads trying to race on a street that is by no means made for racing. Now, one thing I was talking to somebody about at the end of the week when we were, you know, talking about is, you know, why don't they just do like the bohemian crowd? You know, they have the Burning Man, and all the people go out in the middle of nowhere, and they, you know, the big end of the week, they burn the, you know, the fake man of tinder, if you will, because it burns real well. But they got in the middle of nowhere, and therefore no city is disturbed. Why don't they just have Freaknik out in the middle of nowhere? I mean, that's what they did with Woodstock.
What would they do at Woodstock?
I mean,
in Atlanta, they can go to clubs and stuff, but I mean, you know.
People play these things. Like, there's a big music festival in the middle of California that's in the middle of nowhere. they bring the speakers in. I mean, the music in. They bring the DJs in.
Also, didn't one of the local radio stations kind of promote Freaknik coming back to Atlanta this year? Isn't that how it came back?
Maybe
103 or one of them.
I don't know, because I don't listen.
I think it was WSB 750. I think Clark Howard was the ringleader on that, is what I heard.
Oh, okay.
That's their point, you know.
And Neil Bork.
So, yeah, I think
I'm sure Neil was front and center on that.
That's the report I heard, you know, because, you know, Peach, soft rock or whatever it was, they're no longer around. So, you know, it had to be somebody to tote the water of Freaknik. Well, it's been the Kudzu Vine, and this was, I guess, 2 years and 51 episodes for us. And next year will be our third anniversary. So we hope you join us on the Kudzu Vine.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Good night. Right off.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.